Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
I've never really had anyone ask, what are you, or like, what's your skin tone? If someone did ask me, I would probably say, I'm mixed.
I'm half Pakistani and I'm half African-American.
I'm Asian and American.
Filipino-American.
Black and white and both.
Half black and half Japanese.
1,000% a person.
Do people ever confuse what your race is?
I get everything but what I am pretty much
every single day.
That's an excerpt from the new documentary by comedian and award-winning filmmaker W. Kamau Bell, titled 1,000% Me, Growing Up Mixed. It's an exploration of how multiracial children confront the issue of race and identity. Well, tonight we talk to W. Kamau Bell. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Kamau, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. This film has been a long time coming and so very necessary. Why did you decide to explore this issue?
You know, I have three mixed race girls in my house, black and mixed race, because that's how America works. You can be both. And me and my wife, who's white, had even before our oldest daughter was born, we realized that her identity as a mixed person was going to mean that she had an identity that we didn't 100% relate to. So we prepared ourselves and we got books. And my wife studied how to do black girl hair. And you know, luckily we live in the Bay Area, so there's other mixed folks out there. So we knew they'd have a community around them. So yeah, it was. I mean, it sort of started as just, how do we prepare for this child? Now we have three children. And then at some point, people ask me, like, when are you going to do something about mixed people? You've done all this other stuff on your show, United States of America. But I really felt like I didn't want to make something on United States of America that focused on mixed folks, because that show is really about talking about trauma. And I didn't want to look like the identity of being mixed was, like, centered in trauma. There's certainly trauma there. But when I got an opportunity to do something with HBO, I felt like I could make something that was, like, kid-focused and family-friendly. And even though it was talking about big issues, it could be a little bit light and lyrical. So that's how it came together.
How long have you and your wife been together now?
20 years, sir.
20 years. Congratulations. So
thank you.
What are the challenges of raising mixed race children? And did the two of you think about how your children would be impacted by this issue before they were born?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's what I was trying to say earlier. Yeah, we thought about it before our daughter was born. That's why my wife studied. She literally studied. There used to be a website called Chocolate Hair Vanilla Care, where she studied how to do black girl hair so that she was not the white mom who didn't know how to do her daughter's hair.
Wow.
We got books in the house, not that books that featured white characters, black characters, and then mixed kids. We got books all about the different shades of colors, so we knew we'd have a book called the Shades of Us, and you know, the Shades of Us, and it's all about how black people come in different shades and have different hairstyles. And so we thought about all those things, but you know, like any parent, you try to prepare, but then the kid shows up and knocks all your preparations to the ground because they just want to eat. You know what I mean? So you know, but we definitely thought about it a lot. I mean, I grew up in a house where we talked about race and racism every day. It was family business. So I've continued that in our house. It is a regular conversation. It was really important to me that our kids hear those intense and difficult discussions about racism in our house before they go out into the streets and hear from somebody else.
Well, you're famous for your work, but you're also famous for your hair. You could have done the hair. why did you just give your wife a break, man?
Yeah. Well, we do. Sometimes Sammy goes out what we call freedom hair when it's all out like mine is, but she wants more complicated hairstyles than that, of course.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking with W. Kamau Bell. He is an award-winning filmmaker. His latest project is 1,000% Me, Growing Up Mixed. It's an exploration of multiracial children and how they confront the issue of race and identity. If you have a a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. Gosh, the calls are already coming through. You've got a 9-year-old on the line here. Hello. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
What's your name, dear?
My name is Gossa Mitchell.
Gossa?
Gossa, Vienna Silent.
Okay. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind? So, I am Gossa Mitchell. I'm 9 years old. I'm half white, half black, half white. And I'm Kenyan and Italian. And I live in Ashburn.
Ashburn, Virginia.
And I'm happy to be mixed.
So at 9 years old, what's that like for you? I'm sure you have loving parents.
I do.
Okay. So what's it like for you being a mixed child?
My friends always ask me that why is your mom black?
And how do you feel about that?
I ask my friends why you say that.
I guess sometimes it's a bit of a rough patch, isn't it?
And also I have some loving friends.
Always important. Kamau, your thoughts about what this youngster is sharing with us.
Yeah, I mean, we talk to kids who, in the doc, who say things like that. The kids either ask them what they are or why is this. And so I think that's, you know, I think one thing that the film hopefully does is sort of just open up our eyes that, like, families don't always have to look like each other. We have some kids in the film who are actually adopted, or one kid in the film who's adopted, who's my goddaughter. And so I think we just have to generally just, the more we sort of train our kids to understand that families can look lots of different ways and can be comprised of and have come together lots of different ways, the less kids will be asked questions like, why does your parent look like this or that?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for giving us a call. I appreciate your time. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You know, come out. What kind of conversations? I mean, I know you and your wife prepared for this, but was there ever a point where you kind of looked at each other, you know, considering the way America was 20 years ago or so and the way it is now? Did you ever look at her and said, you know, honey, you sure you want to do this? You know, because, I mean, you know, I joke, but, you know, you have people where race is not the consideration and they still say that the world is such a difficult place. Do we really want to bring children into the world? But now you have this extra layer, can I say that? Layer of mixed race. So you've got multi layers here.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so I think when me and my wife met, mostly it was like, are you sure you want to marry a not successful comedian? That was probably the biggest concern. I was like, are you sure you want to get involved in this? Because I was not close to being a filmmaker or close to having any comedy specials. But yeah, we talked about race and racism a lot. Now, the other thing is we live in the San Francisco Bay Area, so there are lots of interracial couples out there. So I think if we lived in different parts of the country, we might think differently. We might have had different conversations about it, you know, and we traveled around a lot too. But I would say that, like, you know, like many black folks, if not most, you know that, like, you only can be hopeful if you're doing the work. And part of doing the work as black folks is we have the job we've been hired to do or the job we have given ourselves if we're self-employed or own our own businesses. And then there's the job of, like, making that racism baton lighter for the next generation. So my mom was born in Indiana in 1937 when she, you know, and she's separate and unequal. Schools were segregated. So by the time she handed it to me, it was a lot lighter than when she got it. Now, I do think we're at a point in this country where that racism baton can get heavier based on what's going on, but I feel like I will be hopeful for the future if me and the people I know keep doing our jobs to make this world, to make this country better.
Which brings me to my next question, and you really kind of touched on it when you talked about your mother. You know, the way we look at mixed children has changed so much in America, and this country has such a difficult history, from the impact of slavery to terms like, you know, quadroon, octoroon that we saw in Louisiana, to the issue of passing, and in the Black community, not being Black enough, and and having so-called good hair. Here we go with the hair again.
There we go.
How do you address that with children? And in the film, did you talk about the way that the country has moved historically about race and mixed children?
So, yeah, I mean, the film touches on, like, certainly touches on the fact that, like, when I talked to my daughter in the film about how do you feel about the fact that how poorly Black people have been treated in this country historically while also having white family members. And so, we like, you know, you can't ask a kid a more loaded question than that, basically. Like, you are related to white folks, but you also know the history of this country. At one point in the film, she even defines segregation for her younger sister. So we get into those issues. We talk about the loving couple, the couple that went to the Supreme Court to make marriage between a non-white person and a white person legal all over the land. So there's a lot of, like, knowledge that is throughout it. It's just when we come at it from a sort of layer it in. We don't give it to you all at once. And then the film, one of the opening stories of the film is my middle kid, Juno, who's very light-skinned and has very sort of wavy brown hair and has her mom's complexion a lot more than my complexion. And she tells a story about how she was at school one day and another little girl ran up to her and called her white. And I have to say, it's one of the most proud moments of my life that Juno got mad at that kid, told that kid, I'm not white, I'm Black. And she went to the teacher and told the teacher, hey, the kid told this to me, I just want to let you know this is going on. In a way that, like, I don't know that light-skinned or Black folks who could pass didn't always do that in the history of this country. Yeah. But I really was proud of the fact that Juno doesn't see being Black as being, like, a hindrance in the way that, like, let's be honest, being Black in this country is not always a good thing to be, but she understands and she has to claim it because that's who her family is.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to filmmaker W. Kamau Bell about his latest project, 1000% Me Growing Up Mixed. It's a look at mixed race children. Let's talk to Sandra calling from D.C. Sandra, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening.
Hi.
I really enjoy your show.
Thank you so much. I listen to you
every evening, and you always, everything is so informative. I always learn something. And this topic really hit home for me because I only have one child, a daughter, and I have one grandson who is biracial. And it was very hard for me. I love him very much. I love my daughter. But it was very hard for me because my daughter was raised in Southeast, and I'm still in Southeast.
Southeast D.C.?
D.C., yes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people couldn't understand, why in the world would Denise want a white man? And then, you know, and one thing about my grandson, Mr. Fisher, he looked white because of the fact he looked just like his father. So you saw no blackness in him. Mm-hmm. And even my friends would say, Sandy, when is he going to turn, you know, get a little darker? And then he had beautiful hair.
Yeah.
And he's still a handsome young man. But I'm telling you, it's hard for biracial kids out here now. But to me, society is encouraging it because if you look at the commercials now on TV, you always see a white woman with a black man or a black man with a white woman and the mixed kids. So it's too many commercials that's showing it.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you, Sandra, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts about that. You know, Kamau, what your thoughts about what Sandra just shared with us?
I mean, I think it is certainly still challenging for mixed kids. I think a lot of this is, I think it is in the doc you see that the youngest kids sort of feel more hopeful and more open. And as people get older, the real world starts to push in. Yes, I do say you see more commercials with interracial couples in there. A lot of times commercials lead the conversation in ways that the rest of us aren't comfortable with. But you know, I think that you still see commercials with couples of the same race in them. I just want to be clear about that. But I do think that, like, there are often ways that commercials lead the conversation. I'm not sure why they do that, but I think one thing they do know is that if you see people in a commercial, you know that the commercial knows those people buy this product. So that's a purely capitalistic enterprise. But I think that the thing we try to just say in the film is that, and I think sometimes Black folks who, when you have mixed kids, especially mixed Black kids who are mixed with white, there's a sense that they're somehow losing their Blackness. And I think the kids in the film, each one of them says, I'm not half this and half that, unlike the child we called in. I'm all this and all that. I'm 100% each. One kid, Miles, says, I'm 100% Black, I'm 100% Filipino, and I'm 1,000% a person.
But, you know, you are old enough to remember when the old one-drop rule,
sure,
you know, was an identifier for being Black. And I know, when I was in television, I had a co-anchor. Her mother is white, her father is Black, and our viewers used to ask me, well, is she Italian? And I would say, well, no, she's Black. And they would say, really? And she's from, you know, the D.C. metro area, mm-hmm, and, you know, grew up in the same way that I grew up. And she identified as Black. You know, that, mm-hmm, and I think for a lot of people, you know, when you talk about, is the one drop rule still an issue for mixed race children?
I mean, I would say that, like, the kids I talk to, that first of all, I don't think many of them know about the one drop rule.
Right.
They just know that I have a Black parent and that parent's DNA is in me, so I am Black. And I also have a parent of a different race, and that parent's DNA is in me, so I'm also that. I think they're not as, I think left to their own devices, they're not as conflicted about what am I. I am me, and I am made up of all these parts. Mm. In the same way that, I'm not, you know, I took my Henry Louis Gates DNA test and found out that I was 72% African. I'm not conflicted over what that other 20-some percent is, 28%, I can do the math. I'm not conflicted because I am Black. I am me. You know what I'm saying? I think sometimes we get caught up in other people's identity when they aren't caught up in their own identity. And I think the more we can, like, especially with mixed kids, let them define themselves as they want to be, the better we'll be off.
I need to take a break, but I've got more questions for you, a whole lot of questions for you about this incredible film. Of course, it's on HBO. You can see it right now if you have HBO. Also, Jake calling from Ashburn. We're going to talk to you next. Also, Ben calling from Columbia, Maryland. You're also next. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This discussion continues in just a few seconds on Sirius XM Channel 141, where you're talking to W. Kamau Bell about his new film, 1000% Me, Growing Up Mixed. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. I'm talking to comedian and award-winning filmmaker W. Kamau Bell about his latest documentary, 1000% Me, Growing Up Mixed. It's an exploration of how multiracial children confront the issue of race and identity. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Jake calling from Ashburn. Jake, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind? Jake, are you there? Jake, give me a call back if you can. Ben, calling from Columbia. Yes, sir. What's on your mind?
Yeah, my question is actually for Kamal.
It's sure.
A simple point. When he said that when his daughter came home, it was one of the very proudest moments when she declared that she straightened out everyone that she was Black, and it made him proud. I'd really like to know, how did that make his wife feel? Because she...
how about that? Did you have to sleep on the sofa after that conversation?
No, my wife knows how this country works. My wife is proud that her that her daughter knows about her black identity. And my wife is also proud that her kids relate to the white side of who they are. So there's no conflict. Our oldest daughter, the very first thing she ever wrote down, before she could even read, she was just sort of mimicking what she saw, was a sign that said Black Lives Matter. And it's one of our most proud pictures of her holding up a sign that says Black Lives Matter. So I think there may be, I'm sure there are white spouses out there who have these mixed kids who are black who feel conflicted. Me and my wife would not have been together for 20 years if that was a conflict for her. Her big conflict is trying to make her kids, and is trying to, not even conflict, the thing she wants to do is make sure her kids know their history, know what's going on in the world, and also know that she loves them. that's all she's concerned about, and the kids know that.
Yeah, yeah. Ben, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tish, calling from D.C. Tish, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, yes. I was just listening to your topic, and it is very interesting because, you know, if you look at slavery and you look at, as time has gone by, how light-skinned people have always come first when it comes to their complexion. When it comes to children, when you say once a person, you know, has a child with a black person, they're automatically on their ID or their identity is always black. So my question to the panel or whoever is there,
Mr. Bell,
what about children that think they're white or feel like they want to be white because of the circle they're in? I don't really hear, you know, much from there, but I do recall there was a lady who was mixed, but she wanted to be white, so she kind of like changed her complexion and her hair, just so she can be seen more as white, because she would go for interviews and different things in the industry or the working world. Them seeing her as white tend to have gotten her further in life. So there are people out there that are mixed, but they really want to be white.
Yeah, Kamal, that's a really interesting question. Your thoughts about that?
I mean, you know, let's be clear. White supremacy is the rule of the land in this country. And until we dismantle that, we're going to have a lot of problems. And colorism is one of those problems. And let's also be clear that skin bleaching creams have existed for a long time. And they weren't just for folks who were mixed with white. There are a lot of black folks who use skin bleaching creams because we all have been sort of invited to reach for whiteness, as my friend Pastor Michael McBride from Berkeley, California would say. So I would say that, like, I think the you know, and then I would also say this, which I've brought this up a few times. Some of the most angry, militant black folks in this country have often been light-skinned black folks who felt, like, angry that their light skin gave them access to privilege they didn't want. You know, Malcolm X wouldn't have identified himself as mixed. I think his mom probably was. But he was one of the, you know, you don't get much anger than Malcolm X. Bob Marley was mixed, and you don't get much more militant than Bob Marley. So I think there is a tension that exists inside some mixed folks, and some mixed folks double down on, like, I'm going to be as black as I can be, and some mixed folks, and I think some of it's like what you talked about earlier, feeling like they're never going to be black enough, they start reaching for whiteness. Now, I think that the more we allow mixed folks to claim their identity and the more we allow them to be what they want to be in this world, maybe that happens less. But let's also be clear, white supremacy is in charge of all of this. And while a lot of us are fighting with each other about colorism, and I'm not denying that colorism exists, let me be clear, but the more that we are as a community fighting about colorism, white supremacy sits unbothered going, mission accomplished. And I'm sort of paraphrasing Dr. Yabba Blake, who said that on my show, United States of America.
Yeah. Tish, thank you so much for your phone call. I wanted to share this with you because I think this was really fascinating. Many years ago, I had an intern. She was a mixed young lady, brilliant. I mean, this young lady was absolutely, absolutely just big brain brilliant. Her father is white. Her mother is black. Both of them PhDs. And from your part of the world, that San Francisco Bay Area, so forth and on. But she would, you know, often she would, you know, say to me, and this was hilarious, but it, as you know, as a comedian, even, you know, all jokes have some basis in fact. And she said her roommate, who had never knowingly spend any time around a mixed race person, would always ask her, so that thing that you're doing, is that the black side of you doing that, or is that the white side of you doing that? She said, is that a black thing or is that a white thing? Mm-hmm. And when she was confiding in me about this, I said, well, what did you tell her? And she said, it's neither. It's just a thing. And, you know, but the other thing that did happen was during that summer, her parents actually came to see me. And, you know, when I went out into the lobby to speak to them, you know, her mother gave me this great big bear hug. I couldn't breathe. And her father was in tears. And he said something interesting to me. He said, you are the most significant black male in our daughter's life. He said, because where we live, he said, there are very, very few, if any, black men. And I wonder, you know, particularly from your perspective as a black man raising, you know, mixed children, you know, from your perspective, just how important is it, for you as a black father to really, you know, place your imprint beyond the DNA on them, the mm-hmm. intellectual imprint, the social imprint, the understanding that life ain't no crystal stair.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing for me, because it's like, when we talk about the concept of black, let's be clear that race is a social construct that America really refined and took to a whole new level when they withdrew enslavement. So when they sort of called us, you know, the N-word, I don't know if I can say that on your channel.
Let's not.
Okay. our first identifier was a word we didn't get to choose, and it was meant to demean us.
Right.
And then over the course of history, we sort of started to say, how about colored? How about Negro? How about Afro-American? How about African-American? How about black? Some of us still use African-American. And we slowly got to sort of define ourselves. And I think we have to understand that, like, that only happens through struggle. Like, that only happens through really being, and what comes out of that is we start to have black pride. And what we have pride in is what we have created in this country that this country can't take credit for. So you talk about music, you talk about culture, you talk about art, all sorts of things. Talk about inventions, talk about like the hairbrush, talk about Madam C.J. Walker. So yeah, if you go to my kids' house, if you go to my kids' rooms, there will be biographies about black women. There are books about black folks. There are books, fictional books that star black characters. And we also live in Oakland, California, so they're seeing black people every day. And we also then really like prioritize making sure that we do, you know, I grew up doing Kwanzaa before black folks really did Kwanzaa. I don't even know if they were still doing Kwanzaa. But so our kids do Kwanzaa the day after Christmas. But the day before Christmas, we go to my wife's family's house to do crab cappuccino, because that's what her family does for Christmas, because they come out of Italian roots. So, you know, during the pandemic, every day I woke my kids up, because there was no reason to wake up when they weren't in school, to Nina Simone's Young, Gifted, and Black. Mm. And so these are not accidents. These are like, but I do think that like sometimes mixed folks, maybe one of the parents is not in the house, so the other parent doesn't know to do that. Or maybe one parent isn't as connected to their racial roots as their, and so they don't do it. They didn't have it for themselves. So I think for me, that's the whole thing, really exposing them to why this black thing is so awesome, why the culture we have created is so incredible. I'm going to brag on my kids again. We just went to the Oakland A's game the other day because I was invited to throw out the first pitch. And after I threw out the first pitch, they played the national anthem. And as soon as it was over, my oldest daughter, Sammy, turned to me and talked about how racist the national anthem was. And I was just like, you know. And she wasn't doing it in an upset way. She was doing it in like, isn't it funny that that's our anthem? Because it's racist. And she went through it. And again, that's one of those moments of like, Whatever we're doing, it's working.
Yeah, you probably turned to her and said, who are you? Oh, you're my child.
Yeah, no, I actually high-fived her. I was like, that's my kid.
Right, exactly. Let's go back to the phone lines. Pearl calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Pearl. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was calling because I'm Caucasian. I'm 60 years old. My oldest daughter, she's interracial. She's 41. I have a set of twins who are 36. So, you know, I was back there when things were a little more different than they are now.
And my kids,
you know, like when I was younger and I was, when they started busting into schools and different friends and stuff, some of my white friends got mad because I had some black friends. And I was like, well, you can't tell me who to socialize with because I like everybody.
Yeah.
I deal with how people deal with me. There's racism on both sides. Believe me, I felt it on both sides. From white people, because, you know, I had an interracial relationship when I was younger. From black people who don't want to see the same thing.
Yeah.
So, but my kids grew up, and one thing, when my daughter was going to kindergarten, I had to enroll her in school. They had to check the race. It says black or white. I check both because she's both. The lady says, well, you have to check one, I said. And she says, and usually, she's looking at me, she says, usually they do what the father is. I said, well, let me see. She lives with me. I'm her mother. She'll be white.
Okay.
So going through school, just because of society trying to say if you have a drop of black blood, you're black. All my kids were enrolled in school being white.
Wow. Interesting.
They didn't have others.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids, they grew up like my daughter's favorite animal is the zebra. She said it's just like her.
Pearl, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I appreciate your phone call. Merlene calling from District Heights. Merlene, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for having this conversation. Is there an email where I can talk to you? Because I have so much to share.
Who, me or Mr. or Kamal Bell?
Mr. Bell.
I mean, if you go to, I'm not going to just put my email out on
no,
the
world, right, but
if you go to my website, you can get in touch with me.
What is your website?
It's wkamalbell.com.
Okay,
wkamaubell.com. I'll do that, but really quickly.
Sure.
My husband and I, we're black, dark-skinned. We adopted a boy at 18 months. He's now 16. But I found the most pressure has come from other black children. Mm-hmm. The pressure that he's felt, they've actually called him white because he's in the in between.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And he's felt the most pressure from other black children. And he checks both when it comes to it. He just got his first job, and he just checked both, white and black. I said, go ahead, do whatever you feel. Check both. He also has an open relationship with the other family.
He has an open
relationship with the biological mother. I let him see the biological mother. He has a younger brother that's biracial. He has a younger brother. And I allow him, from the very beginning, he knew he was adopted. He's adopted. I didn't say that at the beginning. He's adopted. He has a relationship with the biological family.
Okay.
He has three older brothers and sisters that are white.
Sure.
He has a younger brother that's biracial,
mm-hmm.
and he has a relationship with everyone that's there, because I didn't want it to come back on me that you lied to me about my family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Marlene, let me ask Kamal if he wanted to, you know, respond or share some thoughts about what you've shared with us. Kamal, please go right ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, what she's pointing to is the fact that if you really want to do your best to raise these kids who have this mixed heritage, it's a job, you know, and it's a thing you got to think about at every opportunity. And on top of that, what we find is, like, when you talk to kids who are, like, under the age of 11, who are mixed, they feel very solid in sort of being able to claim both. But once kids get to that preteen, middle school, high school level, that's when other kids start to, society starts to push in, and expectations and hormones and maybe some bullying about, like, who are you, and you're not enough this and you're not enough that. And I think that's where we get caught up in, like, really letting white supremacy dictate the rules of engagement.
Yeah.
Because I think if we just sort of allowed people to be who they are and claim who they wanted to be, we'd actually create more allies and more change and more positive change in this country. But when white supremacy starts to create an idea of, like, what's black enough and what's not black enough, and it's all based on, you're not actually looking at what the person's doing in the world, or you're not looking at important things. You're maybe pointing at what music they listen to and not who they are in their heart and will they show up for you when you're in trouble. You're letting white supremacy dictate the terms of engagement. So the more we really have those active conversations, the better it is.
Merlene, thank you so much for your phone call. You know, Kamal, we often think about identity in terms of how we see ourselves. But
mm-hmm.
how important is it, if at all, that the conversation be had for others? Because a lot of times And you, I think you probably remember that dust up a couple of months ago in Great Britain about one of the members of the royal family asking a black woman, "Where are you from?"
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm,
she said, "I'm, you know, I'm from here." But then mm-hmm. she went on to say, "No, you know, where are you originally from?
Where are you really from?
Yeah, where are you really from?" And you know, sometimes, you know, that conversation can be taken, you know, taken the wrong way. Because look, I ask when I have guests come in here, I ask them that all the time. And it has nothing to do with race. I just want to know where you're from. Where,
it's an interview show,
right? It is. Yeah, you know, where's your mama from? She's from Indiana. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, yeah. But when it comes to people of color, particularly mixed people, adults or children, you know, that question can be fraught with all kinds of potholes and speed bumps.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I think that, like, that's why the film is hopefully, it creates conversation, which has already sort of happened, even it's happening here today, even though most people probably haven't seen it. But we want it to, we've made it family friendly so families can watch it together, because I think it's important to create conversation across generations. And I think it's also important for people who are not mixed race, and, you know, specifically white people, to sit down and go, look at all you don't know. Look at all you're unaware of, so that when you walk up to somebody and say where you're from, you have no idea how complicated and how loaded that question is.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's often a legacy of, like, you know, talk about the British Empire. It's a legacy of ownership. It's a legacy of, like, basically walking up and checking a black person's teeth. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the thing we want this film to create is, like, these people in the film have gotten, you're lucky they got this vulnerable, that they are this open and they participated in this documentary. I feel that way about it. But really, you should spend more time sitting back and listening than poking at people for the answers for your own personal curiosity.
How do you do that? How do you have this conversation with children? I mean, I'm a father. My daughter's 24, but there was a time when she wasn't.
And yeah, that's how that works.
Right, exactly. And I know that even with the wonderful relationship that I have with her, there were some things that, particularly when it came to race, when it came to issues of gender that were, you know, sprouting up in her high school, that she was... something she was more reticent to talk about than others. Was it difficult to talk to the children about this?
No, I mean, I think the number one thing, first of all, you know, that parent-kid relationship is always going to be more fraught than a kid showing up and talking to a TV interviewer. You know what I mean? Like, so that, I think that helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing we do on the set is we make the kids comfortable. A lot of juice boxes, a lot of cheese pizza, a lot of candy. You know what I mean?
So, like,
you make the kids know that you knew they were coming. We'd have my daughters would bring, like, board games and things for kids to play and deck the cards. And so you make the kids feel like we knew they were coming and it is set up for them. And then before I even start interviewing them, I just ask them about themselves. I ask them about what they're doing. I create a bond with them. And the other thing is this is really about the technical side of it. You make sure they sit in chairs that they feel comfortable in, where their legs aren't dangling off the side and they feel small. You make sure and so the person who was uncomfortable in the interview was me. I was the one who was sitting on the floor. But these kids were sitting in chairs that made them feel big and powerful and like they were expert witnesses in their own lives.
Were their parents uncomfortable?
I mean, all the parents would listen in. I mean, first of all, you have to remember, anybody who's showing up sort of knows what they're getting into. And either it's because they know my work or they know somebody else is dealing with the project. A lot of it's because people knew my work. So these were not court subpoenas getting people through the door. You had to want to sort of, like, be a part of this to get through the door. But what really the thing was, we would let the parents listen while the kids were being interviewed, and the parents would often realize, oh, my kid actually thinks they know things they don't know, or my kid is way deeper than I realize. So a lot of times kids would get things wrong about their own parents' personal, like, where they were born or things about, like, where they go for Christmas. The kids would just get some facts wrong, and the parents would be like, I can't believe you don't know that. But then the other thing was, these kids would come out with these profound statements about race and identity, and the parents would be like, I'm glad I came to this because I never could have got that out of them. Because, you know, kids don't want to talk to their parents that way. They'd rather talk to a stranger that way.
Give me an example. You said they talked about some, or made some profound comments about race and identity. Give you an example.
I think that they said, like, there was a recurrence of the kind of statement that was like, being mixed race doesn't make you less of either race. There was a recurrence of the idea of like, being part of each race doesn't make you less one thing and less one thing. It's more and more. And I think that's something that, like, I hadn't heard when I was growing up, and maybe you too. We did say biracial or half black, half white, like the young man. These kids say mixed. They don't have this idea of like, oh, I'm only a little bit this and a little bit that. They think of it like, I think the way they talk about it, I think of it like pizza toppings. When you say I want a pizza with sausage and onions, you expect it to have sausage onions all over the pizza. You don't expect it to be half sausage on one side and half onions on the other side. These kids think of their identity as an as Kanani put it, who's in the doc, it's an opportunity to learn more about yourself when you're mixed. It's an opportunity to learn more about each side of your heritage.
What is it that you learned from this project when it was all done that you perhaps did not know before?
I mean, one of the things that has happened since the project has come out is a lot of mixed adults who have seen it talk about how much they appreciate it, but even more, how much they wish they had it when they were a kid. Because the doc is focused on children. And they're like, I love this so much, but I really wish I had it when I was a kid. I could have used it, because I think a lot of mixed kids in this country, especially of older generations, grew up where they were the only mixed kid around and didn't know there were other kids out there in the world like them. So that's to hear mixed adults be like, it resonates with me now, but I really wish I had it when I was a kid, makes me hope that there are mixed kids out there who maybe are growing up in communities, because again, this is the Bay Area, so there's a lot of mixed kids out there. But there's definitely mixed kids growing up out there in the country and communities where there aren't a lot of mixed kids. And hopefully they will see this on HBO and HBO Max and feel like, oh, I didn't know that there was more out there like me. It makes me feel better about who I am and the skin I'm in.
Were there some difficult moments for you in doing this piece?
I mean, you know, whenever you involve your family, you got to, you know, it's like you sort of want to treat your family like they're any other interview, but they're also your family. So you have to, like, sort of, it's definitely hard to, like, to be on set and manage all three of my kids, my mom, my mother-in-law, and my wife was there too, so she's also managing, and also trying to also be a director and producer on a set. You know what I mean? Like, so it's just like, with those other kids, I'm not responsible for whether or not they eat lunch that day. But with my kids, I go, if you don't eat lunch, you're not going to do good in this interview. You know what I mean? So you gotta, so there's a lot more when you put your family in it, and it's also pretty scary. Me and my wife have worked hard to keep our kids out of the spotlight of my career, because a lot of people hate me. And so it's a big risk to put our kids out there, but we felt like if we're going to make something about making kids, our kids have something to say. And if we don't put them in here, we're going to have a mini mutiny on our hands.
Yeah, and I was going to, you know, even beyond the conversation about this great documentary, and because when I get home, I'm going to watch it tonight. But, you know, your hair notwithstanding, that and let's put aside the fact that, you know, all of your high profile projects are certainly well resourced regarding, I'm sure you have a great staff and, you know, advanced people, producers, and, you know, and everything else, but I must say that, you know, you have an uncanny knack of talking to people who otherwise would not talk to someone who looks like you. What would you say is your secret sauce? I mean, comedy, okay, yeah, I get it.
That's a part of it, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, how do you do that, in a, particularly when you're talking about people who would otherwise, you know, hate you, and how do you get it out of them?
I think the first thing is, a lot of times, if you're talking to somebody who really knows that you don't, that you're not going to enjoy the conversation, or they know you disagree with them, a lot of the beginning of the conversation is them trying to trigger you or make you yell or get angry. And if you know that going in, you can sort of prepare yourself for that moment so you don't respond to it or you don't react to it. So a lot of times when you're sitting down with somebody who, like, you know, you see it all the time on cable news. People get down and they argue with each other. Or you see it on the internet, people arguing with each other. If you refuse to take the bait of the argument, eventually that energy goes away and you get to a real conversation. And the other thing you do is, especially if you're doing this for TV, I know my value is in my ability to shut up and listen more than it is to retort. So the longer you can sit there and not wait to talk but actually listen, the more that person will reveal things about themselves that they didn't know they were going to, because they keep waiting for you to interrupt and you don't interrupt. And suddenly they get to things where they get to say things where, like, I can't believe I said that. And that's true of people that you are contentious with and people I'm not contentious with. That's just how that works. The more people are so used to not having the space to talk that they get, that they don't, that they're not prepared when you just go, no, keep going.
That's fascinating, because, but again, and you kind of spoke about it, if you lived in another part of the country, that you may have a maybe different perspective when it comes to having a conversation about, for example, mixed children. And I know, having worked in, you know, the Southeast, you know, I've worked in Alabama and I've worked in the Midwest, and in some teeny weeny minuscule towns, I mean, towns, you know, covering news in towns of less than 800 people, that, you know, sometimes, you know, you want to listen, but also you also want to be still so that you can get out and report the next day. Some final thoughts about this documentary. I would argue this is your best work yet, but, you know.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
I appreciate that. I just, you know, for me, this is the first thing I've ever made that was made to be family friendly. That a family could sit down the way that I used to sit down with my mom and watch Eyes on the Prize when I was a kid. I really thought about the fact that I want this to be something that the whole family can sit down in the room. The kids might not catch it all. There's a joke about tequila in there. But it is something that kids can watch, parents can watch, grandparents can watch, and then when it's over, they can all turn to each other and have a conversation, which is another reason we kept it to an hour. It moves quickly, it is funnier than you expect, and it is definitely made to start conversation.
Yeah, well, you know what they say, you know, kids and animals, you know, they're always going to upstage you.
Yep, and I'm happy to be upstaged. The last thing I really want to say, too, is also, right now in this country, as we know, there's all this anti-woke, anti-CRT, don't teach kids in acting history in this country. And this film is an effortless rebuke on saying kids can't handle discussions on race and racism.
I think that's a wonderful way to end this conversation. W. Kamau Bell, I want to thank you so much for talking to us. It's been an honor. I'm continuing to follow your work and looking forward not only to this, but the next project. So do your thing.
Thank you. I will. I still got 3 kids who like to eat every day. So
how about that? Thank you so much. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, May 5th. For news director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryan, producer Candace Wilson, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Good night and have a wonderful weekend.